Money Psychology. Money Psychology.
Every time you reach for your wallet, check your bank balance, or make a financial decision, you're not just dealing with money, you're reliving every money lesson, fear, and belief you absorbed before you were old enough to understand what any of it meant. I'm Elliot Graves, and this is Money Psychology, where we explore how your earliest financial experiences created the money mindset that controls your financial life today. Welcome to Money Psychology. Money Psychology. Have you ever really stopped to think about the soundtrack of your financial life? I mean, beyond just the obvious. What if the songs you stream, the anthems you blast in the car, are subtly conducting your spending, your saving, your entire attitude towards wealth? It's a question that's been on my mind a lot lately. As a writer, I'm fascinated by the stories we internalize, and song lyrics are some of the most powerful, most repeated stories in our culture. I was working on a character who was a musician, and I went down this rabbit hole of rags-to-riches narratives in music, and it just hit me. We absorb these messages about money from our favorite artists all the time, often without a second thought. That's so true. My interest came from a slightly different place. I was reading about in-store marketing and how different genres of music can increase sales. It made me think about my own life, the shift from, say, angsty punk rock in my teens, which had this very anti-consumerist message, to the more aspirational, living large themes in some of the music I listen to now. Did my financial mindset change with my playlist? It feels like it did.
Exactly.
And that's the symphony we're here to decode today. We're diving deep into this incredible intersection of music and money. We'll be exploring how the tempo, the genre, and especially the lyrics of the music we love can shape our financial behaviors in ways we barely perceive. It's going to be a fascinating conversation. We'll look at the cultural cues, the emotional triggers, and even peek behind the curtain at how musicians themselves navigate the often turbulent financial world of fame and fortune. So stick with us as we press play on the hidden financial messages embedded in the music that soundtracks all of our lives. And it's interesting you mention the musicians themselves, because there's this performance of wealth that has become almost inseparable from certain genres. I mean, you look at a lot of mainstream hip-hop, for instance. The lyrics aren't just about money. They are detailed, itemized lists of consumption. It's the brand of champagne, the model of the car, the designer of the watch. It creates this incredibly potent and very specific vision of success. A vision that's almost hyper-real, isn't it? It's not just being rich. It's a very particular aesthetic of being rich. But then you can flip the dial to, say, traditional country or folk music, and the narrative is the complete opposite. It's about the dignity of labor, the struggle of making ends meet, the value of a home that's paid for, not a mansion that's leased. Right. It's the story of the busted-up pickup truck versus the Maybach. So what does that do to us, the listeners? When we marinate in these completely opposing financial worlds, does one resonate more than the other? Do we internalize the struggle, or do we start chasing the fantasy? Well, that's the core question, I think. From a behavioral standpoint, the aspirational narrative, the Maybach story, is incredibly powerful. It taps into our brain's reward system. We hear those lyrics, we see the videos, and we get a little vicarious hit of dopamine. We start to associate those luxury brands with that feeling of success and excitement. So it's not just an appreciation for the artist. It's almost like our brain is window shopping. It is. And retailers know this. It can lead to what's known as aspirational spending. You might not be able to afford the private jet, but you can afford the brand of headphones the artist wears in the video. You buy a small piece of that fantasy. It's a way of signaling to yourself and to others that you belong to that world, even if it's just for a moment. That makes so much sense. It's a token, a tangible piece of the story. But what about the other side? The narrative of hardship, does that encourage us to be more frugal, to, you know, appreciate the simple things?
You'd think so, but it's more complex.
sometimes those narratives can normalize financial struggle. If every song you love is about how hard it is to get by, it can inadvertently create a sense of learned helplessness, a feeling that financial difficulty is just the default state of being, which can, paradoxically, discourage proactive financial planning.
Wow.
So it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. You hear the story, you see it in your own life, and you think, well, this is just how it is. It can be. It's not a conscious thought, of course. It's a slow, subtle conditioning. The music provides a soundtrack to a struggle that feels universal and therefore, maybe, inescapable. It can offer comfort, which is wonderful, but it might not offer inspiration for change in the same way the aspirational tracks do, for better or for worse. And that's a really chilling thought, that the very thing you turn to for comfort in a hard time could be subtly reinforcing the walls of that hard time. It makes me think about the difference between music that offers solidarity, I see you, I'm with you in this struggle, and music that offers a ladder. That's a perfect way to frame it. Solidarity versus a ladder, because we need both, right? But what happens when our playlist is all solidarity and no ladder? It's like we're using music to regulate our emotions, which is one of its primary functions, but we're regulating them to stay in a state of comfortable discontent. Oh, that's interesting. So we're not just passively absorbing these messages, we're actively seeking them out to match a mood we're already in. If I'm feeling stressed about my credit card bill, I might not put on a song about making millions. That would feel jarring, inauthentic. I'd put on something that matches my anxiety. You probably would. It's a process called mood-congruent listening. We seek out music that reflects our current emotional state. But here's the twist from a behavioral perspective. That music then primes us for our next action. Listening to a high-tempo, aggressive rock song when you're angry about a bill might feel cathartic, but research suggests it can also increase risk-taking behavior immediately afterward. No way. So you listen to that song, you feel this rush of defiant energy, and then you open your laptop and, what, make a risky stock trade? Or maybe just an impulsive, I deserve this kind of purchase. It could be either. The music doesn't tell you what to do, but it can put your brain in a state where a riskier, more impulsive decision feels more natural. It lowers the cognitive guardrails. Conversely, listening to slow, minimalist, ambient music has been shown to make people more patient and deliberate in their choices. So if you have to sit down and do your taxes, maybe don't put on a high-energy workout playlist. Probably not the best idea, unless you want to get creative with your deductions, which I wouldn't advise. But think about the flip side. You get a promotion. You get a bonus. What's the soundtrack to that moment? Oh, it's something explosive, something celebratory. Queen's Don't Stop Me Now, or something similar. It's pure, unadulterated triumph. You want the music to amplify that peak feeling. And what does that amplified feeling lead to? For many, it leads to celebratory spending. The music validates the emotion. The emotion seeks an outlet. And the most immediate outlet is often spending. The fancy dinner, the new watch, the song becomes the anthem for the splurge. Yeah. The music gives you permission, in a way. It turns a financial decision into the crescendo of an emotional story. It's not just buying the thing. It's the triumphant final scene of your personal movie, and this is the soundtrack. Precisely. But what I find fascinating is the dissonance. What about songs that are sonically upbeat but lyrically devastating? Think of, I don't know, a band like Foster the People with Pumped Up Kicks. You're dancing to it, but the story is incredibly dark. Does that create a parallel in our financial lives? That's a fascinating question. The cheerful denial. Wow, it feels like the ultimate form of cognitive dissonance, doesn't it? We're literally dancing on the edge of a darker reality. Financially, it's like whistling a happy tune while walking past a mountain of debt. The melody becomes a shield against the lyrical truth. A shield, yes. Or maybe an anesthetic. It numbs you just enough to ignore the warning signs. You're getting the dopamine hit from the catchy beat, which overrides the cautionary tale in the words. It allows you to participate in the feeling without having to engage with the consequences of the story. So, When we look back on everything we've talked about, the aspirational luxury, the comfort of shared struggle, the way tempo can prime us for risk, it feels like the central theme is awareness, or a lack thereof. We're so often just passive consumers of these incredibly potent financial narratives. I think that's the heart of it. We're not curating our financial mindset. We're just letting Spotify's algorithm do it for us. The biggest takeaway for me, from a practical standpoint, is the idea of a sonic audit. Actually looking at your most played songs and asking, what is this music telling me about success, about struggle, about what I should want? Yeah, and is that story helpful? Is this anthem of struggle keeping me stuck? Or is this anthem of success making me feel inadequate and pushing me to spend? It's about moving from being a passive listener to an active interpreter. And my final thought is a bit different, I think. It's that we can also use this strategically. If you know that ambient music helps you focus, put it on when you do your budget. If you know that triumphant rock song makes you want to splurge after a good day, maybe save that one for the gym instead of the car ride home past the mall. That's a great point. It's not about censorship. It's about intention. Using the power of music for you instead of letting it work on you. For me, the writer in me, it all comes back to the story. We have to decide if we want the music to be the soundtrack to the life we have or the life we are trying to build. Well said. And the score for that life is entirely ours to compose. This has been Money Psychology. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening with us. The next time you make a financial decision that surprises you, whether it's an impulsive purchase or an overly cautious investment choice, ask yourself, whose voice am I hearing? And what childhood memory might be driving this choice? Understanding your money psychology doesn't guarantee better financial decisions, but it's the first step toward making choices based on your current reality, rather than your childhood fears and dreams.